Most premium drinks brands don't fail because of the product. They fail because they can't stand out. And in a category like gin, where everybody looks on the shelf, that's a serious, serious problem. So what does it actually look like to build a premium drinks brand that people can remember, that they come back to and choose over everything else? And I'm so excited today to be joined by Howard from Solcombe Gin. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's so good to have you here. I am going to start with, I'm a massive Solcombe Gin fan and I have it every week. I have the glasses, I have all of the bottles. So I'm so glad that you're here because we're local, we're from the same area, and I would love to hear more about Solcombe Gin, where it started, the provenance behind it, and I'm going to start and say over to you.
Wow, okay, that's an opening. Well, glad you were a key Solcombe Gin consumer. That's always lovely to hear, thanks. And it means a lot to us. We've put so much effort into what we've done with the business and the product, so it's always nice to meet one of our customers.
Fan.
Indeed. So I'll start with the beginning then, shall I?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wind the clock back.
Right to the beginning.
Right to the very beginning. Let's take it back to when I was about probably 5 years old then, even then. So confession, I'm not originally from Devon, okay?
Ooh.
I'm from the south, I'm from Hampshire, so not that far away. But before my family moved to Devon, every single year, Solcombe was where we went on holiday, without fail. 2 weeks, we used to rent a nice little house overlooking the estuary. And you know, as a child, I'd be there on the beaches, you know, making sandcastles, damming up the little streams that you get on a lot of the beaches.
Crabbing.
In Solcombe. Crabbing. Love the crabbing. Solcombe is amazing for crabbing.
Yeah.
Going through the rock pools as well. And sailing my little boat around the estuary too. And I loved it. You know, it had a place in my heart. And I couldn't sleep the night before we'd be leaving to drive down to Solcombe the next morning. I was that excited about it. So always loved it. And then my family then, a little bit later, actually moved to Solcombe altogether, which I was pretty happy about. And then there used to be a sailing school in Solcombe. It was called the Island Cruising Club.
Oh, love that.
It was based on a disused old ferry that was moored in the estuary. It had like this big pontoon lashed to the back of it with all the dinghies and stuff on it. They also had a number of yachts and some classic sailing vessels as well, Brixham trawlers, which are sort of now, the one called Provident in particular is quite famous now. And as a child, I did a couple of sailing courses there. And then as I got a little bit older, I trained as an instructor. And so in the summer holidays, I would teach sailing to children.
That's amazing.
At the Island Cruising Club. And that was where I then met now my business partner, Angus.
Wow.
So we'd both be teaching sailing there. And at the end of a day, teaching sailing to the kids, it was quite a social life.
Yes.
We'd head into town and have a few drinks normally. And we'd normally go to the yacht club, which we still have a great relationship with now. And then overlooking the estuary as the sunset, I kid you not, first drink of the evening, gin and tonic.
Yeah.
That was what it was. So that was kind of my and our introduction to gin, and combine that with our love of Solcombe and sailing. So we did that in our holidays. And then a number of years, Angus and I then went off to, you know, uni, did our own careers. And then after a number of years, not wanting to reveal my age too much, we both kind of got to the point we wanted to start our own business together. We both just wanted to do something different. We both had a love of fine spirits, this shared love and childhood of Solcombe. And at the same time, this sort of artisan craft distilling movement was really starting to take off in the UK. And so we got talking and we thought, this has got to be a great opportunity. You know, we love this. We love Solcombe. Solcombe and gin sounds like a good combination.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it's always been there. And so then this is back sort of in 2014. So then we're like, right, let's do it. Let's start the business.
Wow. So it started out of meeting so young. How young were you when you met?
Probably
teaching sailing.
I'm trying to remember now, maybe 15, 16.
Love that.
Something like that. Yeah.
So from there then, so we're talking 2014.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember it was a barbecue at Angus's house. We were chatting about it. That's when we had the idea. So then the next thing, there was kind of three things we needed to do. Number one is we needed to gain some more experience in creating gin.
Yeah.
And then start developing our gin recipe.
Because that's not what you did at university. It was completely separate.
That's okay. Right. We were, you know, experienced consumers of the product. just not so experienced at making it.
Yeah.
So we needed to develop our gin. We needed to raise some investment.
Yeah.
To start the business, and we needed to find a location for the distillery.
Yeah.
So let's start with those things then. So let's start with them making the gin. So first of all, actually, we went to work in a whiskey distillery up on the island of Islay in Scotland.
Okay.
To get some general experience of distilling. We also worked with an industry expert to give us some coaching and training. And we just bought a miniature still, this sort of size, in fact, identical to the ones we have at our gin school now at our distillery. And we had an idea of what sort of flavours we'd like.
Yeah.
And so we kind of started with a base set of botanical flavours, and then we just iterated and did blind tastings for a period of about 18 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you were up there for 18 months doing that? Or?
No. So up at the whiskey distillery, we were there for a week or two.
Okay, fine.
But then we had a little unit down near Sorkham where there's mini still, and we were just there just each day making 3, 4, 5 different recipes of gin.
Yeah.
And then doing a blind tasting, decided what we liked and what we didn't like. And then we come in the next day and iterate some more. We drank a lot of gin.
That's how it should be.
Indeed. And then every so often we'd have sort of what we felt was our sort of short list of our best gins so far. And then we'd have, you know, friends, family, or people we didn't know, or the odd person from the industry come and do a sort of, we'd have like a blind tasting event, and we'd be like, here's gin number A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think? Get feedback. Take that on board, then go back into the, go back into our...
And that live feedback piece as well is just so powerful, isn't it?
It's super important, because it's so easy to be biased in what you think you like, or you particularly really want a botanical to work, and you know it's in recipe C, and so you really kind of want a C to be best.
And the emotional piece in there
is so true, Plus the fact that, you know, we're both competitive, not at least with each other. And so, you know, if recipe B was more mine and C was more Angus's, then we'd have that bias. Although that was why we were blind even when we did it, so that we couldn't be biased towards our own recipes. Although sometimes you could taste that, you know, you'd know.
That one's mine.
Yeah, exactly, you sort of know.
Yeah.
So we did that. So, and then cut to the next piece then. So in terms of then finding a location for the distillery, super important to us that it was actually in Sorkham. It sounds like an obvious thing, but a lot of brands out there in food and drink will hang their brand off a place name or location, but not actually really have any relationship whatsoever with it. And so we wanted somewhere in Sorkham. There's not a great deal of commercial property in Sorkham. So we were trying to work out where can we find a premises for the distillery. And then we kind of heard on the grapevine that that this island cruising club, where we used to teach sailing when we were younger, as well as being on this disused ferry that I mentioned, they also had a sort of an old boat shed on land as well, where they used to do boat maintenance. And that was on Island Street in Sorkham. Now, the Island Cruising Club by now had started to run down a little bit as an organisation. And they then had sold off this boat shed, which is pretty ramshackle. And we'd heard about this, and we'd heard that it had been bought and it was being developed and it was going to be rebuilt completely into a whole brand new building.
On the water?
Right next to the water. Yeah. It's literally right next to the water on Island Street. And we're like, well, this sounds like a great opportunity here. And this feels like destiny. You know, this is how we met.
Yeah.
This would be amazing. And the developer had already had some architect's drawings done of the building, of what he intended, and they were already on the council planning website. So we downloaded these architect's diagrams from the council planning website. We then got hold of some big pictures of, you know, shiny copper stills from the internet, and then sort of photoshopped them into these architect's diagrams to sort of show this big copper still behind the main window. We then arranged a meeting with the developer. We put together, you know, 5 or 6 slides of this. This is what we want to do. And we turned up at his house and pitched to him as to what we wanted to do with this building. And at this point, we hadn't secured finance, but he was super on board, super supportive, and basically said, look, provided you can secure some finance by, you know, date X, the building's yours. So
destiny.
So that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then in parallel, then we were trying to obtain investment, which is, you know, a lot of networking, a lot of, you know, a lot of pitching to people.
Yeah.
But this really helped as well, because what's so important when you're trying to gain investment, when you're, you know, such an early stage concept business, the closer you can bring that concept to reality, the better. So at this point, you know, we had some prototype gins people could taste. We had some schematic diagrams of what the distillery was going to look like, where it was going to be.
Yeah.
So that really added some sort of flesh to the bones, if you like.
So this was pre-having a bottle of Sorkham gin. Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. You're super concept stage, and you're trying to ask people to trust you and invest in you when you don't have the product to show them, you know. We'd had, you know, I'd spent like £75 having some initial brand design, which by the way appears nowhere anymore. but one day I want to dig that out, actually.
Yeah, you should.
So that was really, really valuable having these kind of some of these building blocks in place. And so then, long story short, after about 18 months, we'd got the building secured. We had the investment secured we needed for the sort of the seed investment. And we started getting amazing feedback on the gin. And the feedback was, guys, what are you waiting for? Stop fiddling around iterating on this gin. It's amazing. Go into production. Yeah. So we did. And that was June 2016.
Blimey. So we're 10 years this year. So Solcombe Gin's 10 year anniversary this year.
Indeed. So you may be hearing a bit more about that shortly. So,
ooh, yeah. Exciting. Yeah. Okay, so we've got the unit. We've got, talk to me about the product. What happened from the product perspective from that piece? So you get the unit and then you get the investment. What's the next sort of step of that? How did it then go into sort of getting the bottles, getting the flavors, if you like, made? What's the next step of that?
Okay, so for the flavors, we were largely basing it off flavors that we like. We like a slightly citrus-led gin.
Do you call them flavors?
I call them botanicals typically, but yeah. You know, it's all good.
Yeah.
I could talk for so long about this stuff. So I am going to go on a bit of a tangent for you.
If you ever need a guinea pig as well, like I love gin, it's fine.
Okay, great. Well, we may take you up on that. So then developing the recipe, Solcombe has a rich maritime history.
Yeah.
It should be no surprise. And actually, back in the 18th century, they used to build these wooden vessels called, they became known as the Solcombe Fruit Schooners.
Okay.
Big, fast trading ships. Wooden sailing vessels, copper bottomed, used to sail around the world and import fruits and spices from the West Indies, the Azores, the Mediterranean. There's some, actually in the local museum in Solcombe up at Overbeck's, there's some great books about these. And actually you can dig out from there and online their old cargo manifest lists.
Wow.
See where this is going?
Yeah.
So we dug these out and could look at what botanicals, what ingredients these vessels were bringing in, you know, a few hundred years ago.
Oh, I love this.
And so it was like, wow, this is great inspiration. We kind of knew what sort of flavours we'd like. And then also looking at that. So actually a lot of some of the botanicals we used were inspired by those. And one of them actually, I mean, the start point, our maiden gin that we launched in June 2016, it's slightly citrus-led with red grapefruit. And how we arrived at that was, aside from the fact that we quite like citrus and we like red grapefruit, one of the main fruits that that was imported by these back in the day was then known as a shaddock, which is actually now known as a pomelo. And then grapefruit is a cross between a pomelo and an orange, if I remember correctly. So this sort of led us to, actually that could be really nice. That sort of fits in. So there's a lot of inspiration from these vessels and what they're bringing in, and then a lot of iteration. So then the bottle and things. So the bottle, when you're starting out, you don't have enough capital, even with some investment you may have, but we didn't, to start having a bespoke bottle made.
Yeah.
So a lot of the bottle manufacturers that have various, what they call stock shapes. And so you're just there, like, we're just there getting all these sample glass bottles in and just trying them out, seeing what, you know, how they looked, what did they feel like in the hand? Because what's quite important as well is particularly for the entree, for bars, having a bottle that looks crazy funky is all well and good, but if it's not practical for your barman to easily pour and stuff like that, it's a problem.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of take these things into account. Anyway, we found a shape we really liked. So that was that kind of solved. And then we had to get into brand design as well. So then one of the other early tasks was, in fact, one of our non-exec directors, who's actually an old school friend of Angus's, who'd worked in the drinks industry for a number of years, but was now working in a design agency.
Oh, okay, cool.
And he's brilliant. And to be fair, actually, we went to a few design agencies and they sort of pitched. But actually, even though we maybe would have had a tiny bit of bias towards him, they were the best.
Yeah.
And so then we worked with them to sort of try and create the brand, the label design, etc., which is kind of a collaborative piece, really. They were very skilled, but there were aspects of things that Angus and I wanted included in the brand, a sort of a coastal or nautical association. Hence, you may not have even clocked it, but obviously the label's a pennant. It's a pennant shaped. That's the idea. So a lot of people might think, oh, it's kind of sort of vaguely triangular. The idea is it's a pennant, as in a pennant flag. And that really comes from Oh, it's okay. I could just talk for so long about this.
Please, we're not gonna talk get about it. I love it.
So there's a thing called a gin pennant.
Okay.
Which is used in the Navy. And it actually looks, it's kind of split into three sections. It's kind of a green, white, green sort of along the pennant. And then in the middle bit, over the white bit, you have a picture of a martini glass.
Oh, cool.
Okay, and it's a gin pennant. And the idea is that when you're His Majesty's Royal Navy ships are in harbour together, moored up. If you hoist the gin pennant up your flagstaff there, off your mast, then you're inviting the officers and the other vessels to come to your vessel.
That is so cool.
It's so cool, isn't it? And there isn't meant to be a bit of a thing where at times what you do is, for fun, you send like a junior midshipman to like sneak onto somebody else's boat, hoist it up theirs, and then everybody turns up on their vessel for demanding gin and tonic. So we love this concept. So that was part of the inspiration for the label. And then there's various other little touch points. You know, the bottle says "Born of the Sea," taken from the wind.
Spotted that.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So yeah,
I look at that a lot.
Okay. Good.
So premium. I guess this takes us into that premium piece, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The story of how Solcombe Gin was born.
It's
amazing. Yeah. And even I didn't know the story. So thank you for telling me that because, as you know, I would say I'm a brand advocate everywhere I go. If I go into a bar, I always try and pick out Solcombe because I feel so proud that we're Southwest based and it's from the Southwest. So wherever I am, whenever I go to London, I'm like, I'll have Solcombe. And if they don't have it, I'm like, you definitely need to make sure you've got it. But I think going into that premium piece around how do you take the concept, the story, all of those things that we've just spoken about, you know, whether it's the botanicals, all of those things that go into it. And how do you keep that so firmly rooted into your brand? And how do you spread that as you get bigger? Because that's the challenge, isn't it? As you grow, how do you keep that premium positioning, whether that's visually, whether that's the storytelling piece? It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard, yeah. I mean, it comes down to culture within the team and everybody really aligned in that way and pulling in the same direction. When we started the company, we had three values we wanted to set for the business. One was passion. Everybody had to be passionate.
Yeah.
We wanted to be passionate about what we do and what we stand for. Two, attention to detail, like an uncompromising approach to quality.
Yeah.
That's got to run through everything. That's got to run through the quality of the liquid first and foremost, but then everything else that goes with that, be it the bottle, the labeling, the packaging, the marketing, the digital media.
Yeah.
All of that's got to be at that level. And then the third value was integrity in what we do.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have those core values.
Are they still true today?
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%, love that.
It sounds like a bit of a cliche. I'm almost embarrassed saying it, but it's true.
No.
So you have those which kind of provide a nice sort of guiding railroads for what you do. We have this desire, this love of, let's call it aspirational coastal lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, we'll have like, you know, brand guidelines to try to explain exactly what that is. So that helps sort of influence what we do. But then really, I think it comes down to culture, you know, and the people that, you know, the great team that we have, really understanding the importance of quality, this sort of uncompromising approach to quality, and never allowing to yield on that. And that's tough sometimes, you know, that can be really tough. And I think as we grow, you know, to your point, you know, it's quite easy, or the risk is it can be quite easy as you grow to just start cutting the odd corner. Okay,
yeah.
We just want to increase the scale of production by X, therefore we'll just simplify this little bit here and just, it won't make much difference, we'll just do that. We're pretty hard on ourselves. It is, it comes down to the values. And so you've just got to be on it and not allowing, because it's kind of a slippery slope. Yeah, as once you sort of yield on one thing, then it's another, and then it's another, and before you know it, you've lost it. So, yeah, and I think we've also always had a very clear view of where we want to be in our ambition. You know, the ambition always had been to be the world's number one luxury coastal spirit. So again, that really helps whenever you're thinking about how you want to be positioned, what are you doing, what should it look like, how should the product come across to people, how should you communicate it? That really helps influence those things as well.
Yeah, and then just the gin market.
Yeah.
If we talk about the market itself, it is a highly saturated market, isn't it? There's so many options. There's, you know, whether that's UK, whether that's worldwide, it's vast. And I can say that as a gin drinker.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of standing out in that market, obviously we've spoken about whether it's the branding piece, whether it's a premium piece, it's really difficult, especially when you think about that shelf space and you think about a bar. If you go into a bar and they've got 50 different gins, in your mind as a brand from a Solcombe Gin perspective, what goes through your head when you're thinking about those sort of challenges? Because it's difficult. It is difficult to stand out. And what process goes into this is how, is it, you know, I don't know, a new flavour launch? Is it a new, I don't know, a special edition? We see that quite a lot in our industry. You know, if we go into seasonality and things like that, how do you guys sort of leverage that sort of crowded market and standing out?
Okay, so firstly, so important and a constant focus for us is differentiation, unique market positioning, and it's around this luxury coastal positioning and sort of a bar above, you know, what we see other people doing. But then, how do you make that a thing that people are aware of and communicate? And there's a few things I'd say. Everything's got to be beautiful. Everything's got to be perfect. Everything's got to be immaculate in what we do. But then also then partnerships are really, really valuable.
Yeah.
You mentioned sort of a special edition there. You know, we have a partnership with the Royal Ocean Racing Club. It's a really prestigious yacht club that organises the Fastnet race, amongst others. And we actually created a special edition gin for those guys. That helps again sort of reinforce some of our credentials. We also, once every few years, we created this initiative. We call it our Voyager series of gins, where once every few years we will collaborate with a world-renowned chef or an iconic winemaker, and create a collaborative gin. So we've worked with Mark Hicks, Monica Galletti, Paul Ainsworth, most recently, Michael Caines, a great local guy, Niall Keating, and also a couple of amazing wine houses as well. And we'll create a limited edition gin. When it's with the chef, they'll come to Solcombe and they will collaboratively, we will create a gin with them, taking their sort of expertise and knowledge and their desires and blending those with our own. So that's been a lovely thing. And again, other people aren't really doing that. And so doing cool things like this, it's like a proof point of where we are and a differentiating proof point. And it has a lovely sort of halo effect over the rest of the brand. And then there's other kind of, I'm going to use the term, cool things you can do as well. So, you know, there's an integrity and it's genuine in terms of our association with the sea. And I've sailed and been into water sports all my life. And so it's like, well, what kind of fun stuff could we do with that? And so we had this concept of our gin delivery service, whereby, and we still do this at Dartmouth.
Okay.
And we've done it sometimes in Solcombe as well. So where we, you know, we have our own powerboat and people can call us up and order, you know, a hamper or gin and tonics to their boat and we'll whisk it out. And then we're thinking, oh, now let's try and elevate. We're also trying to elevate things further. Okay, how can we elevate things further? How about if it's not just a normal delivery, how about if we deliver a gin butler to that place? So then we have this concept of a gin butler, where, and now as well as sort of doing this through boat, we also work in partnership with people like, again, Michael Caine's actually at Limston Manor.
Yeah.
And some of the other fantastic, Gower Rock Hotel as well, opposite Solcombe, where we have this concept, you can have a private gin butler for a few hours. So it's just, you know, you and your friends, you and your partner, and you have a dedicated gin butler there with an amazing cocktail selection, just at your beck and call.
Yeah.
Just to make you the most outstanding cocktails. And so for us, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. And again, other people aren't doing this. And so lots of really unique things like this help sort of just create that differentiating position for us.
And I guess when you think about, I'm going to call them activations.
Yeah.
Do you sit there and do you think about all of this stuff and you're like, I've got this great idea? Or does it come from, you know, obviously you've got a fantastic team as well, but where do most of these sort of ideas come from? Because it's that emotional connection, isn't it, to the brand, which you've obviously got. And I know from things that we think about, it always comes sort of an idea when you're thinking, oh, that's a really good idea for us to do. But do these ideas sort of start as small little seeds and then, like you say, you keep elevating and elevating? Or is it something that you just go, right, we're going to do this, let's try it and let's see, and then you can be really agile with whether it works and how that goes?
You'll often start in something slightly smaller or slightly different and then evolve into the ultimate sort of finished article. And sometimes it will come from Angus or myself, and other times it will come from other people in the team. What I do find is, what's not a good way to come up with ideas is trying to sit in a darkened room on your own and think, I must come up with some good ideas. Yeah. It's normally about being out and about, seeing what's going on and getting inspiration for something.
Yeah.
And then kicking that around with someone like me and Angus, and we'll talk about things.
Yeah.
And then normally then the other person might be like, oh, well, how about if we did this with it? How about we did this? And then that's when I think you can be your most creative, when you're sort of bouncing ideas off someone else.
Yeah.
And that's then what then would then evolve to what was initially the gin delivery service. And then when we're thinking, how can we up the ante on this further, then became the gin butler.
Yeah. And I think as well, you're not just selling a product with Solcombe Gin. You're selling a lifestyle and a feeling. And it's much more than just the bottle, isn't it? And that's exactly what I feel when I drink it. So I'm like, oh, I might as well be in Solcombe when I'm having this drink.
I love that you say that. That's perfect. That's exactly.
I told you, I'm such a brand advocate. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, and the idea, you know, the thing is, I mean, Solcombe's amazing, but it should be a really sort of mobile concept, in that, irrespective of where you are in the world, you know, a huge number of people love to go to the coast to be on holiday. They love the idea of a lovely sort of aperitif or sundowner by the sea. You know, that desire, that concept travels. And so, yeah, absolutely our desire is that when somebody has a Solcombe gin and tonic, it takes them to that location.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to everything. I was saying before we started the podcast, I've got the glasses that you guys have got. And it's all part of that feeling and making that emotional connection back to what is this brand? What is this product? So we sit in the online space. We do food and drink marketing. So, and for all of our listeners, we focus in that sort of digital presence piece. So my next question is, do you find it challenging taking such an emotive premium brand that has so much sort of connotation to Solcombe, and, you know, taking that feeling, and how do you find that translate over into a digital perspective? Because we see a lot of sort of brands, especially that I speak to, and a lot of our clients, they find that quite difficult, taking something that's so physical and something that's so emotional and creating a feeling into the online world. Slightly difficult, more difficult in terms of this is what we're trying to make you feel, but it's a different type of journey, isn't it? And it probably takes longer for a newer customer to get that feeling and find that emotion. But how do you find that with your current customers or new customers you might find? Is it that tastings are really important? Because I see you at a lot of tastings. Just talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, okay. So part of the challenge we have actually is that there's so many things that we want to talk about, so many components of the brand. It's almost too much. You know, I'd love to talk about the quality of the liquid. I'd love to talk about the Solcombe location. I'd love to talk about some of the activations that we do. And there's only so many things you can communicate. Now, first and foremost, let's start on the sort of the physical thing. Tastings are super important. I mean, ultimately, the liquid's got to be amazing.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, it should be the first and foremost for somebody to become a Solcombe gin advocate. It's because of the taste. It's because of that, you know, and the whole lifestyle thing around it's really important as well. So we do get out there loads and do loads of tastings. And that's really lovely. And also the nice thing with the tasting is, while somebody's having a tasting, you know, I literally look at someone, I was at John Lewis on Saturday, you know, doing this myself. And I'll be saying, okay, well, look, this is, you know, this is the Rosé Saint-Marie gin. It's inspired by rosé wine from Provence. We're trying to recreate those flavours, those subtle notes of strawberry and lemon and French herbs that takes you to the Mediterranean, you know. So while someone's having a tasting, you can also be trying to verbally communicate some of that sort of scene setting around it. You know, we can't unfortunately get into some kind of teleporter machine and just transport them to Saint-Tropez. That would be fantastic. But at least you can try to communicate that. And then in terms of sort of your digital marketing, then yes, social media and any kind of, you know, digital media is really important. And so it is about beautiful imagery and trying to put product and occasion in that locale, if you like. So, so you'll see a lot of it is obviously Solcombe, and then trying to have, you know, what is the ideal location, you know, on a beach, on a lovely hotel or bar by the water where you're enjoying it. So you're just trying to communicate that whole brand world through imagery.
Yeah. And I guess as soon as you get a customer, and I'm just calling them a customer, you know, a brand advocate, you get them for life, I would imagine. I would imagine your customers are very loyal to the product, the premium sort of offering that you guys offer. And is that what you see in your space? Is it that they, once they find you, they're like, oh, how have I never found you before? And then they stay? Or is it that, oh, we might try something else? Because I would imagine as soon as I tried Solcombe gin, I was not going anywhere. That was it. That was the gin for me, because it is so subtle and it is so soft, and it's just, it's the best for me. So do your customers stay loyal to you? Do you see that? Do you see that a lot when you do tastings, when you're, you know, in that online piece as well? Social media is a really good place for people to sort of air their opinions as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there must be some that you know, still, you know, have a few other gin brands in their cupboard, shocking as it may be. But I think it has been a beautiful thing to see how much love there is out there from our sort of loyal customers. You definitely see it. And once they've had it, then the people will just buy again and again, and they do become quite loyal. We've seen that a lot. And where I sort of experienced that firsthand is, again, there'll be times whereby I'm doing a tasting, like I mentioned the other day, or we'll be, or for the team that work in our shop in Salcombe or in Dartmouth, or at events. It's such a lovely job. Hopefully they'd agree. I think it is, because our clients, our customers that come in, they're just so nice because they're so happy.
Yeah.
And they love the product so much. So it's a really, really nice, nice experience for our team as well. So we do see that. And the other place actually we get super loyal customers is if anybody's been to our distillery in Salcombe where we have the cocktail bar, if they've come in there like and you've sort of seen it firsthand where we make our gin, that's pretty compelling. And then even the next level above that is we have a gin school at our distillery where we have 10 of these miniature stills, identical to the one that Angus and I used when we developed the gin first of all. And people come and join us for half a day and under the guidance of one of our master distillers, develop and distill their own gin and create their own full-size bottle of gin and put a personalised label on it. And A, the gin school's fantastic setup. B, the distillery location is stunning and amazing. And C, the team, our distillers, you know, Jason, Andy and Graham, are just super knowledgeable.
Living and breathing your passion, living your and breathing values.
It. Yeah, they do. And they're the nicest guys as well. And so I'm obviously a bit biased, but have a look online. Don't take my word for it. People have the most amazing experience.
Yeah.
And if someone's come and been fortunate enough to have a gin school experience with us, then I think that, you know, it's hard not to be a sort of a lifelong, you know, supporter. I really hope so anyway.
Yeah. And just talk to me about area, because obviously we're based in the Southwest. Yeah. Do you see a lot of your customers sort of North London based? Do you see sort of a mixture of where they come from?
Yeah, certainly. So one of the advantages we had in being in Salcombe is obviously a lot of people come on Salcombe on holiday and then they'll then go back to London or Bristol or Birmingham. So inherently that was really valuable in helping us expand in the first place, and that you kind of end up with these pockets of people then going into their local bar or retailer demanding Salcombe gin.
Yeah.
So certainly I'd say still we have a strong concentration down in the Southwest. We're pretty strong along the South Coast to London, Bristol and Bath going into, and then Birmingham's quite good for us as well.
Yeah.
Further north, less so, but that's, you know, still plenty of ripe area for growth in the future.
Yeah, and they're all missing Salcombe, that's why, because they need to come down to the gem that is. So growth then, 2026.
Yeah.
Exciting plans for Salcombe Gin that you can share on the podcast. What are we going to see? What's coming up?
Well, a lot of it actually is where we've had really strong growth recently is in travel retail. And actually, it's quite nice because travel is kind of a bit of a part of us as well. You know, we love to travel and go to lovely locations. And so we're now in most of the UK, most of the English airports, pretty much all of them actually. Plus we're also on a number of the ferries, and we also have an amazing partnership with P&O Cruises, where we created the world's first distillery at sea. I could talk for a long time about that as well, but that was pretty cool. And so that's been a massive growth area over the last 12 to 24 months, I'd say, and still with loads and loads of potential.
Yeah.
So that's a really big focus now, is to kind of continue to build on that. And then the other area, which...
Does that mean lots of holidays?
Oh.
To try and go and just see where you could go?
That would be... It should do. We should put that into our plans at the moment.
We should.
Yeah. Unfortunately, at the moment, it's more us being at the duty-free stores at the airports, watching everybody else going on a lovely holiday and helping them enjoy it with a nice sample of Salcombe gin. But yeah, we should do more of that. And then sort of related to that, the other interesting area for us is... And sort of going... I haven't spoken much about sustainability and eco stuff, but for our miniature bottles, they were glass. We, at the end of last year, made the transition to little aluminium miniatures.
I've seen. Okay?
They're really cute. They weigh a fraction of glass. They're using fully recycled aluminium. This is the carbon footprint's like a lot better. But also because they're light, they're much more attractive proposition, say, for airlines. So actually, big hope for us in the area we're trying to explore further this year, see if we can actually now spread further into Sonoma. We're in the travel retail shops in the airports. Now let's get on the airplanes. You know, and then further beyond that, then let's see what we can do further abroad. We just launched in Hong Kong a few months ago.
Wow.
Via Hong Kong Yacht Club initially. So that's another pretty exciting area of growth for us.
Yeah, that is so cool. Honestly, if I thought I could have Solcom Gin on a plane, yeah. I would be Instagramming and tagging you guys in it. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So just let's touch on that sustainability piece, because that's really important, isn't it? Especially where we're based in the Southwest. It's something that we try and live and breathe quite a lot. So talk to me about that sort of sustainability piece and how over the years that sort of progressed, because I think it's fair to say, if we go back 3 years, it wasn't a massive focus, or it wasn't a massive focus then, but it probably is more so now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. So there's lots of things that I think a lot of companies do and we do, you know, internally in terms of, you know, chopping out any kind of plastic in your packaging, using a lot more cardboard, trying to reduce the miles from which any component of your product is shipped to you, trying to bring that all closer to the UK. So we've done a load there. Like, it's crazy, you know, 10 years ago when we started, when you sent bottles via courier, I don't know, you might remember these, you'd put them in these inflatable air packs.
Yeah, I do remember them.
Do you remember
them.
Those? Like, it's amazing looking back now that was a thing.
And then what did you do with them?
Exactly. You couldn't recycle them. It was just, right, they must have all gone to landfill. It was awful. So obviously, you know, we got rid of those and, you know, and actually you can have more than adequate, just as good packaging from cardboard that's going to protect the bottle perfectly well. And by the way, that's not as easy as it sounds. You'd be amazed at what couriers can do to try and smash your bottles en route. But anyway, we've got some great packaging. So that's been really good. And then there's other schemes. There's things like the gin refill scheme that we have, whereby out of our own shops and now with a good few actually of our partner retailers, I can name them, we put a large carboy full of our gin into their store, and so then customers can then return to the store with an empty bottle of Solcom gin, and then they get it refilled in store and they get a 20% discount on the price.
Amazing.
So it's great value for the customer, better value for us. We're not paying for a load more packaging. Way better for the environment, because even though glass can be recycled, great, okay, it still takes a fair bit of fossil fuel to recycle a bottle of a glass bottle. And so if you can reuse, and that scheme has grown and grown, and out of one of our retailers in particular, they're selling about as much gin in refills as they are in virgin bottles. And then the ultimate kind of proof point on that one is, and you have to take this as a compliment, we've now seen some other brands copy the scheme, if you like, as well. And there's part of you is like, oh, that's a bit annoying. That was kind of our special idea. But actually, you've got to rise above that and be, this is what we're trying to do. You're trying to provide inspiration for the industry to make things better.
So and if you're other people
are, so that's we're super pleased with that. And there's a similar thing that quite a few brands are doing now as well for the entrees for bars and restaurants as well, where they'll have a number of empty bottles. You provide the gin to them in a bulk format container, and then they refill the bottles locally themselves.
Oh, cool.
So that's quite good. On top of that, we've had a long running partnership with the Marine Conservation Society, particularly focusing on, we did a lot of work trying to focus on the protection and regeneration of seagrass meadows.
Yeah.
Super important in terms of sequestering carbon in the ocean, and also a great habitat for a lot of wildlife as well. Over the years, we've donated over £100,000 to that charity.
Wow.
They do some fantastic work.
And it goes back to that partnership piece that you were saying, partnering with, whether that's charities, whether that's, you know, anybody local as well, is so important from your sort of positioning perspective, and that premium branding as well, which is amazing.
Exactly. It just fits, and it's just kind of, there's a truth to it.
And doing good. Good with what you're trying to do.
Exactly. That's it. And it means you can kind of look yourself in the mirror each day and know that you're kind of trying to do something good, and it's not just purely, you know, commercial. And this all sort of ties in with our proximity to the water, our love of being near the sea. So that's been great. And then we also, it's not really such a sustainable thing, we also have a partnership with the Royal National Lifeboat Institution as well.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, they're an amazing charity.
Yeah.
So we do a lot with those guys too.
And I feel like when they tell you their stories as well and how they started, then it can sort of intertwine those messages as well so nicely.
Yeah.
And like you say, it's real.
Yeah.
It's a real partnership that's built on passion as well, and I can feel your passion from a Solcom perspective, a Solcom gin perspective, and I was always a consumer. And I think, again, before we started the podcast, we'd said we've crossed up paths quite a lot, but we've never actually sat down and had a conversation. And I don't think I actually knew the story of Solcom gin either, which makes me even more a brand advocate now. So it's an interesting one, isn't it, to consumer brand, because I'm your consumer, if you like, and, you know, be that everybody needs to try it, it's amazing, you know, it's the best gin you'll taste. But also now I know that story piece, again, that's so important, isn't it?
Yeah. And that comes down to, there's so much that I'd love to be able to communicate into everybody's head. But often, you know, key challenge to marketing, as you'll be well familiar, is actually, what are the priority points you're going to try and communicate? And you only really can communicate, you know, one, two, or maybe three things max in any kind of given situation.
Yeah.
But hopefully over time, with different pieces of marketing context and communications, you might better, you know, access different aspects of this sort of spectrum of the brand.
Yeah.
And then someone builds up a sort of a full picture.
Yeah. And then they go and tell their friends. Absolutely. And they pass it around, and it just keeps spiraling, doesn't it? Which is amazing. So a lot of our audience and a lot of our listeners are founders of food and drink brands. So if you were to give them one piece of advice for starting a brand, growing a brand within food and drink, it's a really broad question, what would it be?
Wow. I wish I'd known you were going to ask that. I would have prepped some thoughts. What a thought. Wow. Pressure's on. Wise words.
So whether it's a startup phase, whether it's a growth phase, what's that one piece of advice? And I'll give you an example. Kathy from Boundless, her piece of advice was, just get on with it. Just do it. If you've got an idea and you want to take it to market, go for it and do it and work everything out as you go. So I've given you a bit of a...
Okay. Give me a moment or two to think. I mean, the one, I suppose, to me, it's about having a clear vision of where you want to get to and what you're trying to be and what you're trying to do. If you've got that clear guiding vision, then everything can follow from that. You know, so for us, it was always about very high quality coastal spirits brand.
Yeah.
And even to the point that we, you know, when we started, we sort of had this idea of, okay, ultimately what might happen? Well, maybe ultimately it might be that we end up being acquired by an organization that we really respect. Who do we really respect out there? Who really understands luxury? LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy. So that was all sort of in our mind as well, this vision of what we wanted to create, where we wanted to fit in X years' time. And that's just guided everything we do. And I think that's super, super valuable.
Yeah. Oh, good piece of advice. Okay. Absolutely good piece of advice. So I think we've gone through everything, haven't we? What to look out for in 2026, which hopefully you haven't given away anything that we can't talk about. And obviously building that sort of premium brand, which is huge, isn't it? On and offline, it's tasting, it's that digital experience as well, which is so important. And it's all the stuff I geek out on, how can you create that digital experience? But also, I think the biggest thing I've picked up today is how when you have a premium brand, it's about creating something that you want everybody to be a part of. And that's really, really important, isn't it? And you guys have absolutely smashed that. And as you grow, I can't wait to continue watching how that grow, as you grow, how that then sort of dovetails as well. Because I think the way you're doing it now is just incredible. And I feel like I'm a part of it. And I've never really sat down and spoken to you. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really, really useful. And hopefully our listeners will take a lot of value from it as well. But I guess the last thing to say is go and follow Solcombe Gin on Instagram. Go
Please
and visit
do.
Them.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got Insta and Facebook, of course. We do a lot on Insta primarily. So yeah, please do. And if you get a chance, come to Solcombe. I mean, even aside from the fact you've got a world-class gin distillery there. And by the way, I should do a plug. We also make a non-alcoholic spirit, New London Light, which is outstanding. That's a whole other conversation. But even aside from those things, Solcombe is just an amazing place to visit. It's so beautiful. So you haven't been there, come and visit.
And we're just going into the best time of year for
Absolutely.
It as well. So make sure you go down and visit it. I also definitely need to book in for a gin distillery experience. Why have I not done that?
I don't know. Yeah, you should.
So everybody needs to go and check that out, because it's something that is an experience in itself.
Yeah, you would love it. You absolutely should come and do that. Yeah. Bring the team.
I will.
Yeah.
I feel like we'll end it on that. Let's go as a team. Yeah. That sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us, and I will see you next time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.